Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design, thoughtful construction, and little details that make life in your space easier. And now they're bringing that comfort and style outside with their outdoor collection. Burrow's outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry stain-resistant foam cushions. As always, you get free shipping on every order. Get 15% off at burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to your latest edition of Redmen Weekly. We begin with a clip from our final word show as Liverpool unfortunately knocked out the FA Cup at the hands of Manchester United, and the lads discuss how we go about getting revenge in the Premier League in a couple of weeks' time.
They're not good, and no. It's purely speculative to say this at this point, but I feel loads more confident about the league game off the back of that because I know we're better than them, and I also know that they don't get to play out like that. I don't think in a league game. I think it's different. Mm-hmm. I think you can call upon the magic of the cup and do mad things, and you know, play it as a one-off isolated game in the cup, which I don't think you get to do in the Premier League. But it's the bleating that's the hard part. Anyway, how do we feel about it coming out, Lewis? Because as I say, you know, we've got to go there again in a few weeks' time. Yeah. That will be the bigger game ultimately.
Yeah.
It's devastating to not be in with a chance to win the cup. We've lost out on another week of Jurgen Klopp as Liverpool manager by not being able to get to an FA Cup final. That's what we've lost. I think it's fair to say there are bigger fish to fry.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's going to sound like a bit of a sort of geared up chant here, but I'm looking at it with the glass half full mentality. Like I said before, it's disappointing. But the fact that we're even in a conversation to win a quadruple, the fact that we're disappointed because we can't win four trophies, is a testament to where we are as a club. We're still in the league. We're still in the Europa League. There's still two trophies to play for.
Yeah.
Of all three, this is the one that I'm the least disappointed of going out of. I love the FA Cup. I think it's class. But like you said, there's bigger fish to fry. The season's not over. We've still got to go to Old Trafford and we can right the wrong. We've still got a Europa League to fight for where we can win a European trophy. It's heartbreaking. It's going to be heartbreaking for the next 2 weeks, and it will be forever in the history books. There is so much more still to play for and so to win. And the quality we've shown this season, this one defeat should not hamper the lads at all. I think they've been fantastic so far, and it's going to continue for the rest of the season.
Yeah, look, again, I'm not going to just reiterate my point, Steve. There's no point to sit here going, Mickey Mouse Cup. No one's doing that. I wanted to win the FA Cup. I want us to win every trophy, and I'm sure Liverpool did too, which is why we had everyone up in the 120th minute trying to score a late winner for that. So make no mistakes about it, that team was trying to win that game of football for us, as they had done all day long. One of my least favourite shouts in football is when someone shoots and misses and someone shouts "hit the target" at them, as though that wasn't the, you know, they weren't trying to do that. But just to spin this to a sort of glass half full perspective on this, really, Liverpool were running on fumes by the time they got to the Champions League final 2 seasons ago.
Yeah.
If we want to win multiple trophies, you've decreased the chances of that by being in less trophies.
Yeah.
that's fair to say. But I have to, because we're out and there's nothing we can do about it, I have to think of it from this perspective, and that is, another, even if it's just that one less game, forget the final, not having the semi-final to play. You know, it's a trip down to London. It would have been a rescheduling of the Fulham fixture, which, not just in that, it means that's got to be shoehorned in somewhere else where it's already a packed fixture schedule. Well, yeah, when we still haven't fitted in the Everton game yet. Liverpool have got to treat this as a disappointment, but something that there have to be positives to come out of it.
What Klopp's really good at is when we had moments of adversity, 97 points, lost the Champions League final, he's gone and got an extra 10% out of the boys, and they've gone and wrote those wrongs, if right those wrongs, if that's the case. What this needs to be at the very least is a kick up the arse, because we're a bit complacent. We were a bit, you know, just assuming we would win. That's the sort of impression you got watching the game. So what it does is it just heightens your awareness going there, and we'll only need to be 15-20% better than we were to genuinely put ourselves in the position to win that game. So now we have a revenge is a poor word to use in football, but now we have something we need to correct. Now we have a situation where the players will feel for the fans, 9,000 of them in there, and they go away having lost the game. And some of them will be scratching their head going, how did we lose that game? And as you quite rightly said before, it hurts because we contributed so much to United winning rather than them scoring four world-class goals. Yeah. We're culpable for at least three of them. So we go into that game in the league game thinking, right, this is different. This is the one that we're now actually going to use the adversity of losing there and remembering how that felt, because they'd have been singing in his changing rooms and everything. Remember how that feels. It's no cliche, but that, you know, we'll use that to our advantage, and we will be better. Yeah. Szoboszlai will be a bit fitter, a bit stronger, a bit more up to speed. Robbo will be a bit stronger, a bit better, a bit. Canate might be back. Not that I'm advocating that Quantum misses out, but that extra pace in the back line will do you the world of good.
He's a better player. He just is.
And you just wonder whether they get that time and space to get to that position with Canate on the pitch, don't you?
You don't get to pick your best 11 any week, really. You know, I always refer to that thing of the Champions League final team. That was the first game that started together, and everyone goes, that can't be possible, because that's how I remember Liverpool's 11 being. But it's you always have injuries, so I'm going to say, you know, we no Alisson, no Trent, no Canate, no Matip. I mean, people will scoff when I say Thiago, but no Thiago, he's a fantastic footballer. No Curtis Jones,
no Jota.
Yeah. The seven players who, you know, are all first team, basically Liverpool footballers, who would have likely started that game if they were available. The vast majority of them, you know, at any point in the last year or so. So there's that, and you know, United have had their problems, but you can find ways to engineer wins, and we've been doing that now for weeks.
Yeah,
you know, I said it's forgotten, but go back to the FA Cup third round against Arsenal. You know, that's when this run stretches back to. That's like the second week in January. Mm-hmm. When Endo and Salah went off to the Asia Cup and AFCON, and we had injuries to footballers around that time, and we've never really had less than five or six key players unavailable for us throughout this sort of period, and we're finally starting to turn that corner. But the well just ultimately ran dry at that last moment. Just when you think, oh, we should have enough to get around this year. What is interesting about the games that follow, obviously Liverpool, I've got Brighton when they return from the international break. Yeah. We've got Sheffield United at home on Thursday, the 4th of April, before we go to Old Trafford on Sunday, the 7th. And it will be interesting to see, because Manchester United play Chelsea away before us. So on that Thursday, they have to go down to Stamford Bridge in a game of like two largely shite teams, but have got good players, and you know, that will be interesting to see how Pochettino handles that, if he's still in the job. Presumably he will be. And so rather than having a 3 week to prepare for us, they will go into it with tired legs, you know, and a team, and Liverpool will have the do or die attitude, because I don't think we had that in the same way at the weekend. I think they did. Right. Their season hung on that. That was the manager needed that. You know, whereas now Liverpool need those 3 points next time around, and that the challenge will be to make sure that they put the ghosts of this game to bed, really, and kick on. One thing I want to point out about the bleating. So Rio Ferdinand put a tweet out at Wembley, and it's a picture of Rashford celebrating, then it's a picture of him celebrating, and Jamie Carragher walking past looking sad. Fine. Jamie Carragher's response, I think, is perfect. And he put, relax, crying emojis. Man City will beat you comfortably in the final, and Erik ten Hag will still be in charge next season. It's not the win you think it is. And I honestly, I would consider myself to be a generally more verbose person than Jamie Carragher. And that's just, you know, like, because, you know, he was a professional footballer. Yeah. And I'm a chatty twat. verbose. There's my deep vocabulary for you, ladies and gents. I was trying to think about how to sum this all up and couldn't find a more succinct way to put it that really nailed it. Of, again, it's not the win they think it is. And we've seen this in the two seasons where United finished above Liverpool. And Rio Ferdinand in particular was like, particularly that COVID season when he was like, well, United are better than Liverpool because they finished above Liverpool because the league table doesn't lie. And it was wrong because Liverpool had no centre-halves and still finished up one place below them in the league. Last season, similar, they got into the Champions League. That should mean they're better, but they're not. United are not good enough to be at the top level of football. And this is the thing, I agree with that. I totally agree with that. It's a weird notion, and it's a small, very bitter sort of positive to take that this might be the kind of result that keeps Ten Hag in that job.
Yeah.
And I don't think he's good enough to be a Man United manager that makes them challenges. So there is a weird sort of spin on this where I'm made up that they're all on cloud nine in some regards because they're not clever enough to recognise that they're shit.
Yeah.
And they will think that this result means they're better than Liverpool. And I recognise this behaviour because I have been... them in this situation.
We all have.
We have beaten them and gone, oh yeah, there we go, that proves we're better than you. And then they just go, what about the league table? And we go, ah. But, well, we won that game, didn't we? Hurrah, us.
That was their cup final yesterday, in a sense. And like you said then, like, that's what Ole was doing, I said before. He'd lose and lose and lose, get a big win against like a City or something, and he'd be in the job for three more weeks. And that's what Ten Hag's doing now.
Yeah, brilliant stuff as ever from them there. And yeah, that's it. But Liverpool do need to go back to Old Trafford and get the job done and make amends and pick up a crucial 3 points and then go on to hopefully lift the Premier League at the end of the season. And all will be right with the world, of course. Next up is the biased football podcast in this week, where we discussed the points deduction handed to Nottingham Forest and what it could mean for Everton and, of course, Manchester City at some point.
Nottingham Forest handed a 4-point deduction for breaching Premier League's PSR rules. So we're going to talk about that a little bit. Obviously, let's have a look at the league table first and foremost. At the bottom of the table there, you can see Nottingham Forest have had their 4 points taken off, which puts them 18th in the Premier League. Burnley, obviously, a win at the weekend as well. Pulling away from Sheffield United, that might be unassailable for Sheffield United, being 3 points at this stage of the season. But Luton are out of the relegation zone. Everton still close. Peter, I'll start with you this time, mate. Are you surprised? And who do you now think is going to go down?
Sheffield United, say, looked like they're gone. I don't think Burnley will claw it back. I just don't. He changed the keeper, which was a strange one, wasn't it, for the weekend's game? But he's. I just think he sticks with principles too much, which is really good for a manager, but not when you're just 3-4 conceding goals. And then it just depends on the points deduction for Everton, because if it's another 10 points, then that obviously changes everything. If it's 3 points, then I think it'd be Forest. But if you ask me to pick, I'll say Forest will go, because I think it's going to be a bit toxic there at the moment. And Luton seem to have the feel good, we can all do this together spirit.
And Dan, obviously they've been handed a 4-point deduction.
Yeah.
Forest, according to The Athletic, were referred to an independent commission in January after the club reported losses that exceeded the allowed amount over the 3-year reporting period. Under the guidelines, they could have been fined or deducted for the point for the breach, and their 4-point deduction now drops them to 18th in the Premier League. I can almost hear Toffee TV asking why was it only 4 when they were given 10.
Yeah, and ultimately, you know, they'd have a leg to stand on, wouldn't they, if truth be told, because we've sat here for multiple weeks now and said, as soon as the other news come out about the potential deduction for Forest, we said, well, they've set a precedent, haven't they, the Premier League? It's 10 and then potentially reduced to 6 thereafter. So I guess Toffee will have a right to say that. I mean, they might also be best keeping quiet about that now, because they've got potential number one coming down the line as well. So maybe they'd rather it was just 4, because that doesn't quite hurt them as much, if that's the new precedent as it feels. But yeah, I think Toffee will rightly be angry, rightly be a little bit confused as to why. Maybe it's explained a little bit better. I know Forrest have argued the Brennan Johnson sale, or the not sale, has kind of cost them these points, if you like. But it's a difficult one. It's obviously Forrest in a very perilous position. They've been in 3-4 for quite some time now. They've been sinking like a stone, actually, through the league, really. It felt like when they did the managerial change, maybe that was the boost that they needed. If they had a couple of decent results on the back of that. But again, they've just absolutely sunk ever since. Luton, they've had the opportunities in the past week to get out of this situation. They were freeing up away to Bournemouth, and then they played Forrest on the weekend, and they never really grabbed them. I agree. I think they've got the spirit and they've got the wind behind them to try and stay up, at least make a fist of it, unlike the other two. They came up with them. But yeah, in terms of what it means and what follows action wise, it'd be interesting to see whether Forest appeal this. and if there's time for that appeal to be heard, I guess, as well, because I know a lot of the talk about this potential deduction, and indeed Everton's, was that there's a very real possibility that sort of the final standings of the Premier League get decided outside of the football season, like in a courtroom. That isn't a good look, is it? So if Forest do decide to appeal, are we still 5, 6, 7, 8 weeks away from actual hard and fast resolution on this? It's all a little bit murky for me.
It seems, John, like the Premier League just flying by the seat of the pants at the moment, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's very worrying, isn't it? Because they keep saying, oh, we're not dealing with City because it's more complicated and we're getting all our ducks in a row or whatever, and then we'll deal with it properly. But this doesn't make you feel very confident that they know what they're doing. It seems a bit bizarre. I mean, taking points off people mid-season just strikes me as being absolutely stupid. You're ruining your own competition. It's just pathetic. And unless they're going to explain the differences between Everton, say, and Notts Forest, what is the difference between 10 points original and 4 points? That's quite a big gap. Was there that much difference between the two? I mean, I know it's only 6 Everton now, but if Forest appeal and get a couple of points knocked off that, then, you know, it just seems all daft, really.
I really thought, as I said this on a show a few weeks ago, that they should give Forest 10 points and let him go down to 6 on appeal, because 4's going to probably go to 2. I think you're right there. It just, but without them telling us what's happening, no one knows the rules and what I mean, these
could
things
just be
mean.
Random. And how do they decide on the points? 1 minute is 10, the next is 6, and then this is 4, and it could be 2.
It doesn't sound like the club's, by the way.
I'm only concerned about City, so I just want them to get their act together and sort them out. But I'm just not very hopeful. City are going to run rings around them at this rate.
It looks like, doesn't it?
They will do, won't they? And listen, Everton, we know, could face a second points deduction. Who knows how many that could be? It could be half a point.
I mean, the other thing is you get different stories out of the clubs who obviously have a different slant on things. I mean, there's Forrest saying the only reason we went over was because we didn't sell our player soon enough to get the money which would have made us.
Yeah, but they didn't sell the player soon enough. They know the account periods.
No, but what they're saying is that we'd have had to lose £10 million to sell him earlier. So shouldn't we have the right to just, financially, it makes more sense to keep hold of him until we get more money for him? And like Everton saying, well, we're trying to build a new stadium and that reduces revenue, which will keep us, you know, in the black all the time. I mean, are they legitimate reasons? I just don't know. I mean, it's not been explained.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? And obviously I hear Ped and Baz and everyone at Toffee TV talking about it, as Ped actually walks into the room there. Like, these rules are supposed to stop clubs from going out of business, and it actually looks like it's stopping them being able to compete, which isn't what the rules are there for in the first place, is it, Peter?
No, exactly. You saw that stuff on the overlap and all that the other week, and you say if an owner wants to put so much money in, they should be able to, and obviously it's, I think Gary Neville saying League Two, you have to pay like your debts up front of what you think you're going to be in, and obviously in the Premier League it's only so much revenue. It just seems that you make it up on the spot, don't they? And this uncertainty just doesn't make any sense. If you breach the rules and it's a 10-point deduction, which what Everton got, then everyone knows if we ever break the rules, then we lose 10 points. That would be so much easier. But now, if you break the rules, it's 10 points, but if you appeal it, it's 6 points. But if you break the rules in a different way, it's now 4 points. Probably you can appeal that, it goes down to 2 today. And then you can breach them 115 times and delay it for so many years.
There are clubs lower down the leagues, haven't they, who've gone bust and only got 10 points.
Yeah, choice. But you'd almost rather take that, though, wouldn't you? If you're going to overspend and get a player you need, or not sell a Brennan Johnson of your Forest, and whatever they say the reason behind it, if you get your 4 points and it's way of getting the breach to let you have to those points deducted, and it makes it even murkier, as you say, and it makes it even... There's more opportunity to be dirty, basically, isn't there? Because you're almost thinking, well, I'll take the points deduction because who cares? I'm rich enough and my team's good enough that we can cope with 3 points in the year after, we'll be fine.
Yeah, the whole thing, I don't know what it is about it, Dan. It just all doesn't sit right with me. It's, obviously, I don't like the fact that the teams didn't know what the point deductions were going to be for and how many they were going to be. I think if you do come in with something and you go, well, these are the rules, if you break it, this happens. That's a deterrent. not telling them what's going to come isn't really a deterrent in the first place, so I don't like that. But also, I do feel like this whole it's linked to your income thing, I kind of understand where, you know, Toffee TV and that are coming from, because, you know, it is linked to the size of your football club. Mm. So you're kind of almost saying, well, there's the pyramid, and it's kind of always going to stay like that, because it's not really going to... How do you grow more fan base? You win trophies and you win European Cups, and that's how you grow your fan base. Mm. And that's how you become, your revenues go bigger and bigger. But if you make it difficult for them to... I don't know, it doesn't feel like competition to me, and competition's what I like football for.
No, I agree with you. And competition, you know, a meritocracy has to kind of be what we're based on. That's why so much of the Super League was a non-starter, because there was none of that. There was no ability to come in and out of the league, essentially. It was, there's your chosen clubs, away you go. And that's obviously the argument as to what FFP or PSR is now essentially brings to the table for the Premier League. And that's been my sort of big bugbear with it throughout, in a way, because it's felt like, because it hasn't been fit for purpose from day one, they're kind of chasing the tail a little bit now with it. They're trying to make it actually have some teeth and actually have some bite to it, but it's too late now. They feel like that ship sailed a little bit, and it's so messy because they are basically playing catch up, because they're so scared of the football independent regulator coming in. They don't want government involvement whatsoever, so they're trying to say, oh no, look, we've got this, don't worry. But it's a mess. It's clearly, as you mentioned there, there's different points for different things, and then they're getting appealed and they're getting it wrong, and etc. Because the Premier League are trying desperately to show that they can take care of their own house and look after their own business. They don't need any outside intervention. They're panicking and they're flustering around trying to get things in order. And because it wasn't hard and fast, like you say, from the outset, these are the rules. You go over it much, you get this many points, etc. It's just a mess, a complete mess. And I think you're right. I think in terms of sort of the cartel, as they like to call it, it has, that glass ceiling exists, whether we like it or not. I mean, I think there has to be rules in place, because otherwise it becomes a free-for-all, an absolute wild west of spending. And you do see problems like Leeds United had problems when Peter Ridsdale was in charge there. They overspent and ended up nearly going bust because of it. Portsmouth likewise, so QPR for a little bit as well. There has to be rules in place. They just need to be better than the ones that currently exist, yeah. Because right now it doesn't work.
It seems to me like if somebody wants to put money into their football club, they should be allowed to do it. It's up to them ultimately, but what they can't do is saddle the club with the debt. So if I had £100 million to spend and I wanted to give it to Liverpool, I could give it freely to Liverpool and make no bones about it, say it's never coming back to me. I give that as a gift. I should be allowed to do that, surely.
Yeah, that's true. But I think you should, your budget or whatever, and that League Two model, I think, is actually quite a good way of doing it. That I am willing to lose this amount of money, and here it is up front, and then we'll take money out of that throughout the season, and then you can't overspend. That's what you've agreed to pay. You've proved you can pay it because we've got the money, and obviously you then have to make sure the rules are that they can't put it against the club, they can't put it against XYZ. But
it's because teams like City,
yeah,
and you know, Chelsea and you know, some, all the top clubs around Europe can spend what they like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it seems very unfair that teams lower down, mm-hmm, are saddled with rules and regulations that they can't meet. Yeah. If they want to compete, as you've said before, they can't get a look in, can they?
No. You know, but state ownership is a problem in amongst all, isn't it?
Because state ownership is the worst, that's the problem, example, yeah, of that.
And like just self-sponsored and stuff, they've got money from one pocket to another, and it's just, yeah,
yeah. But again, they haven't been able to manage to get to grips with that. Therefore, that's created more problems. It feels like it's spiraled out of control. If they'd just, the minute it happened, if they'd have come in with rules that seriously stated what would happen and what you weren't and weren't allowed to do, they wouldn't have had all this problem. Because they're 10 years further down the line,
the horse is bolted.
Exactly. They're trying to fix a problem they created for themselves over 10 years ago.
I don't even think they're taking it seriously as a crime. They could punish them for doing just that. But what they should be able to do is stand on them, you know, completely batter them for what they've done, because it's cheating.
Yes.
It's not just, you know, we're getting a bit more money into our club. It's breaking every rule in the book, you know. And you should say, well, if you're going to do that, then you can't compete with us when you're not letting you. But they won't do that. They'll just fine them or, you know, at worst, a couple of points deduction, you know. City get 99 points and then get 10 deducted. I mean, they still win the league.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Yeah, wonderful as ever. And yeah, like I say, hopefully we do see Manchester City face their day in court at some point in the not too distant future. I think we'd all be relatively pleased to see that happen. Next is myself and the brilliant Neil Jones, of course, in our Journal Insight show this week. I spoke to Neil about numerous topics, including the transfer window this summer and where the Reds might be looking to strengthen the squad. We'll fast forward a little bit towards transfers, obviously international break now, so what else are we going to talk about? interesting one last night, actually. It's a name that's been circulating for quite some time now, it feels, with Liverpool. Joshua Kimmich, our mate Florian Plettenberg. So we named Liverpool among the five clubs that were interested in Kimmich, and amongst the tweets was the fact that Bayern were prepared to sell him and he himself was not ruling out a move. I mean, in terms of profile, in terms of what he's about, he ticks some boxes, I think it's fair to say, the clubs there mentioned. What do you make of this? You see it, you know, possible, and I know it's very difficult because we haven't got a manager for all intents and purposes next summer, so I'm aware of how difficult it is, but in terms of what we know about FSG, we don't know about Michael Edwards being back in situ, of course. Do you think this is a go at all?
Look, my, I don't doubt Florian Plettenberg and his info or anything like that, but my, well, It wouldn't be my opinion on the on whether it's true or not. My opinion on just whether Liverpool should do it would the alarm would be flashing a very loud rate. 29 years old, from Bayern Munich. Mm-hmm. I just think it feels like it would be a very risky signing from Liverpool's point of view. You know, he's a brilliant player. He's been a brilliant player for many years. He's got obviously a little bit of versatility in terms of right back and midfield, makes him interesting. But really, I look at that and think, what are Liverpool going to give a 4 or 5 year contract to a Joshua Kimmich? You know, plus a transfer fee. They did it with Thiago, and they're you know, in the process now, he could pass him on the way in if he was to sign. As Thiago's on his way out, it doesn't feel like an ideal Liverpool should be getting involved in personally. It would represent a little bit of a change in there. And also, you know, they've got a lot of midfielders, Liverpool. They've got Conor Bradley emerging at right back. They've got Trent, obviously, still there to be fed back in at some point in the next few weeks. It doesn't feel like, well, he fixes a huge problem. You know, he's obviously a quality player and he adds quality to the squad, but I don't really know what he solves in there unless it's, you know, you're completely changing the sort of the profile of where you're going to play football. I would be steering clear if I was Liverpool, but we'll see what comes of it. And I mean, look, five clubs you name there, they're not small clubs that Liverpool would be competing with theoretically anyway. It looks like he's going to have at the very least a pick of, well, six if you include Bayern. He's going to have his pick of some good options there, isn't he?
Yeah, the calibre's there, but the calibre players there, as you mentioned as well. I tend to agree with you in terms of it doesn't feel very Liverpool-esque, and I also agree on the point about where does he fit necessarily. And again, when you've got a high quality operator like him, you kind of find a place for him to fit, don't you? But Liverpool have done this type of deal. You mentioned Thiago there. We haven't necessarily steered clear of it altogether. When we see an opportunity, it's like a gift horse in the mouth type of opportunity. Someone like that was available for 25 million to pluck a figure.
Yeah. But does Thiago change that mindset? Because obviously
you've been burnt a little.
You've had great moments from Thiago, but you've also had more frustration, haven't you, than delight with Thiago. You know, it's great in theory, yeah, you get a world class player, but we've seen Manchester United do it with Bastian Schweinsteiger, Manchester have done it with many players. You know, you look at Casemiro even to a degree where it's like, well, do you end up with a player who used to be a great player who's on a lot of money and he's got a 3-year contract or a 4-year contract? You know, it can become
a burden,
yeah, as much as it can be a spectacular. I think from my sort of very basic kind of approach to this kind of story would just be, I wouldn't be doing it.
Yeah.
I'd be looking, you know, and if you were going to do it, I would have probably been trying to force it last summer when Liverpool really, it felt like Liverpool needed a Joshua Kimmich type sign, and this summer doesn't feel like they do.
No, I tend to agree. Like I say, the midfield rebuild's been wholly successful, and we've still got like the Stefan Bajetic who will come on.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't even mention him yet, of course. You've still got Endo, who's only a year or 18 months older than Kimmich. You've got McAllister, who's, you know, getting better and better. You've still got, obviously, Curtis Elliott, Gavenberg, Soboslai. There's a plenty. Bobby Clark's looks like he's coming through. So there's a lot of midfield quality there, and I am a big fan of Conor Bradley coming through at right back. I think he could be one of those that we see him just become part of the first team furniture.
No, I agree with that, absolutely. Moving on then, transfer-wise. Clubs of Football Insider this time, Liverpool and Tottenham are keen on potential deal for Fulham defender Tosin Adebayo this summer. Interesting part amongst this, of course, is defender 26 is available on a free transfer in June because he's about to come to an end at Craven Cottage. We've seen him quite a bit, up close and personal this season. Obviously, played Fulham a lot, it feels like. I've been really impressed, and I think, as I mentioned there, free transfer. And also, I want to ask you this in a moment, but if Liverpool are going to do some business this summer, which you'd imagine we would, centre-back does feel like an area we might be doing it.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with that. I mean, I like him. I like a few Fulham players, to be fair. You know, I watched Robinson on Saturday against Spurs, and you know, he's always involved in the game, Anthony Robinson, isn't he? And I think if you were looking at left-backs in the future, could he come in through? I don't know about now, but I like Adebayo. He's obviously quick. He's big size on him, but he can play. You can see him. He's got a little bit of sort of quality about him. A little bit of Joel Matip, and that would be the sort of what I would be looking at for the summer. You know, Joel Matip is, even if he got a new contract, he's still not available to play, I don't think, until, you know, probably September earliest. You probably do need one. It doesn't take much for Liverpool to become stretched in the centre-back area. You know, at this moment in time, they've got Kwanzaa and they've got Gomez, but Gomez has been playing everywhere but centre-back, really. So I think maybe there would be a need for an extra centre-back, be it one promoted or one signed. And if it was a free transfer with Premier League experience to the likes of Adebayo, I've seen, obviously, there was another link with Lloyd Kelly, wasn't there, I think, from Bournemouth, and that would make some sense given who's coming in as sporting director, Liverpool's previous interest in him, and the fact that he's played sort of almost every, he's a bit of a Gomez kind of character, isn't he? He's played everywhere across the back. So I wouldn't be at all surprised if that was an area Liverpool were looking at for a centre-back. I think, and also, probably Kwanzaa's development this season has maybe changed the age profile. Do you need a 21, 20-year-old centre-back? Actually, you've got one there. Can you maybe afford to go and get one who's a little bit more advanced, that maybe a little less high profile, who doesn't expect to play every week but is good enough to play when called upon? I think that might be an area to do. I think it's a very interesting... I mean, we've got the question underneath that you've put on the agenda, which says, where do you see us looking with Michael Edwards, Richard Hughes in? I'm interested to see, you know, because it sort of feels like a lot of people can, you could almost gather 10 people around and they could all make a case for a different area, and you'd say, yeah, I can see that, you know, I could see maybe, yeah, Robertson's success area, maybe you need a backup goalkeeper, yeah, you know, I would think another four, you know, I think you can make a lot of cases for it, but I don't think there's one where you go, that needs sorting, that needs sorting. I think it's all a little bit fine-tuning at the moment, and it might depend. Well, I'm guessing it'll be influenced by who the manager is and what type of football you're looking to play. But I think it's a lot better situation than we had going into last summer when it was clear that surgery was needed, wasn't it? In certainly in one area and maybe in two.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And if you had to sort of nail close to the mast then on that, you just mentioned it there, in terms of the department we need to look at, would it be centre-back? If we could only do one piece of business, would that be where you were doing it?
No, I say the same every summer. Probably having last summer, I'd always buy another forward.
Okay,
I would always add to your forward ranks. I always just think if you've got six forwards, you'll always find the right combination. You know, Liverpool have got five really good options there. Obviously, some young players who've emerged. And look, I would love nothing more for the sixth forward to be Jaden Danz next season or Ben Doak or whoever. But I would always be looking and saying, can we get another real top forward? And I just think maybe the one area that Liverpool are lacking in the forward area is just searing pace. Okay. It's just that ability to really sort of stretch the game. You know, I'm not saying Adama Traore style, but that kind of game-changing pace off the bench. Jeremy Doku, that kind of sort of player where you go, well, even if it's 20 minutes, we can throw someone on and he'll just run and run and run at someone. I think that would be my first idea. But yeah, I don't expect Liverpool to just do one thing in the summer. Maybe not. But I'd always look at the forward. And that's even before you maybe consider there might be some questions over other players leaving with Saudi interest. And, you know, even you might, I don't personally think it, but there might be some people who think there's some harsh decisions that maybe need to be had with Gakpo, with Diaz, with Jota, given the injuries that he's had. There might be some questions there. I don't personally think so. I would just add to the stable of forwards if I could.
Yeah, boss, as ever from Neil as well. Some interesting takes from him there. A couple caught me by surprise, to be honest. And certainly in the fact that he'd be looking to strengthen the attacking department. Yeah, I'd be all in for centre-back myself. But yeah, it's all about opinions. And hopefully Liverpool do more than just the one bit of business anyway. And finally, myself and Neil Mellor discussed the rise of Liverpool's academy this season. We've all seen the breakthrough act so far. So I had a chat with Neil about his rise to Liverpool fame and, of course, just how impressed he's been with the Reds this season. You mentioned a couple of names there. I do want to start touching on some names who've come through Liverpool's ranks, and it's a star-studded list, don't get me wrong. I go right back to Steve McManaman, Robbie Fowler, as you mentioned there. They were 1992 and 93, respectively. Carragher, Owen and Murphy came a few years after that, 97. 98 was when the new state-of-the-art academy was opening Kirby, as you mentioned there, followed Gerrard, likes of John Newby. Gerard Houllier came in then and sort of made some changes to Cadbury, I think it's fair to say. Yourself, 2003. Stephen Warnock, John Flanagan, Jack Hobbs, Jay Spear, and the list goes on. Martin Kelly, and a little bit after that, like to Jordan Ibe, Jerome Sinclair, and of course, Trent Alexander-Arnold in 2016. Now, a reason I want to touch on these is because it feels like a lot of them are quite spread out years-wise. Now, if you look at sort of since Klopp came in, the stats behind what Klopp's been able to do in terms of academy players and the amount he's given opportunities to has been absolutely staggering. So recently, Jurgen Klopp handed his 42nd academy player their senior debut. Now, you said earlier on right at the top about Klopp giving opportunities to these players. That's remarkable. Like, to give opportunities to 42 academy lads in 8 and a bit years is staggering.
And at one of the biggest clubs in the world, at a club that's been competing for the trophies, it's just been phenomenal. It's been great to watch. I think perhaps some of those stats might be influenced by his first season when we're in the Europa League. Mm-hmm. And obviously this season we've been in the Europa League. And a lot of his other game time has obviously been Champions League, where young players have had less opportunity, so more sort of Carabao Cup, FA Cup sort of things. But that shows a young manager who understands the importance of blood in these young players and what they can give the first team. I mean, let's look at the first team this season, for example. Jarrell Kwanzaa, Connor Bradley, James McConnell, Bobby Clark, who've played a few games as well, but more so Kwanzaa and Connor Bradley. How many first team managers would have been brave enough to go, I'm going to play you there. I'm going to keep Gomez at fullback. I'm going to play you, Kwanzaa, against Arsenal, against City. And he's absolutely thrived to the point where you're going, well, that solves a transfer issue in the summer. We don't need to go and buy another centre-half, because we know Kwanzaa has propelled himself now to deal with some of the biggest games. But that's on the player who's done great because he can cope with it. But a manager who's brave enough to do that, we're competing for the title. And that hasn't changed. And he's still been playing these young players. Yes, we've had injuries and untimely injuries. And it's unfortunate. But as a young player, sometimes you need that injury to get an opportunity. You never know when you'll get that opportunity. For me, I think the Europa League has been massive for the young players. I really do, because you get to learn what's expected for the first team in a less pressured environment. Let's be honest, playing LASK at home is less pressure than playing City at home. So it's given them that game time to understand it a little bit better, and they've thrived. They've gained confidence. Oh, I like this. Feel part of it. I am good enough to deal with it. So, I think this season has been immense. But those numbers you mentioned about Jurgen giving those young players, there's no other Premier League manager that's done that.
No, it's frightening, really, isn't it? Obviously, he has the complete belief in all of the players that he's given opportunities to, regardless of circumstances. Make you absolutely spot on in that. But what do you think it is about him then, necessarily? Take it away from him and having that faith and that trust in these players. Obviously, he's worked closely with the coaches that we've already mentioned. He's seen a little bit of them down at the Axon and all that sort of stuff. has clearly helped. But from the player's perspective, what is it about Jurgen Klopp and the way he manages and the way he speaks to people, I guess, as well, that makes these players want to run through brick walls? Because it's been said for time immemorial since you've had the football club that players will run the extra mile. They give 110%. He makes people feel 10 foot tall and all that sort of stuff. But you've been a young player playing under football managers. Like, what is it about Jurgen Klopp that makes youngsters respond even more so to him?
I think when he arrived, we knew he had a great reputation as being a top coach. I think he's become one of the best managers in world football at Liverpool. He's won everything. He's proved that. So as a young player, thinking, oh, he's won the lot. And he knows how to do that. And I think the fact that he's so welcoming to the young players, it's a case of, no, come on, you're part of this. So all of a sudden, if you're a young player, think, oh, I've got a bit of confidence. The manager knows my name. He's seen me play. He thinks that I'm good enough to be around the first team, train with the first team, play in the odd game on the bench in the first team environment. So I think his communication and the fact that he's given these young players so much confidence has allowed them that platform to say, well, go on then, there's your opportunity. How good are you? And the manager can't go out there and play. It's the young players who've had to do that. But the manager's maybe given them that little bit of belief and trust to say, listen, I believe in you. Go out there and just do what you can do. So, I mean, if you speak to the young players who've played in the first team, like, oh, thank you so much to Jurgen for giving them that opportunity.
Well, I think they have in many ways in the past few weeks. I know Conor Bradley did an interview recently about he still gets like goosebumps when he pulls on a Liverpool shirt. And they've all said how much they owe to Jurgen Klopp, essentially. Klopp won't see it that way. He'll see it as like, you're good enough to have a game for the first team, so therefore they go and get it. But they definitely sort of owe a gratitude attitude for Klopp to giving him those opportunities. No two ways about that. You mentioned, like, we've spoke about it in passing, like, how important is the role of the manager in all of this? Obviously, we spoke about how good Jurgen Klopp is at it, but there's been numerous Liverpool managers down the years. There's been numerous managers at every different football club in the Premier League who maybe don't give the same opportunities to footballers because they don't think they're ready because they're too young. Or maybe there's too much on the line in terms of their jobs at risk. If they give a young player a game, it doesn't work, who knows? The role of the manager in the way a youngster bursts onto the scene is absolutely pivotal. We've seen Klopp actually be quite clever with that in terms of he'll give someone a couple of games and he'll pull them out of the limelight a little bit. He did that with Harvey Elliott for a while, it felt like. The manager's job when it comes to having youngsters and making them break through feels like it's so, so important.
Yeah, and it can maybe make or break a young player's career. We've seen it in the past. And, you know, I think Jurgen's been expert in terms of developing these young players, so they are establishing themselves as first team players rather than dipping in and out, and you're thinking they're not good enough for Liverpool, they maybe have to go somewhere else. But you mentioned Harvey Elliott, Curtis Jones, another one, we've seen Kwanzaa, we've seen Conor Bradley, another one, Trent before that. So all of a sudden these young players, am I right in thinking, what was it, Trent's debut at Old Trafford? I think Trent's one of his first games for Liverpool.
Maybe early on, yeah. But Hoffenheim, I feel like that might be his first Champions League game. But yeah, definitely.
Chucking him in big games. Yeah. And that's the manager going, listen, you're good enough, don't worry about it. And they've all been able to sort of flourish because they have been good enough, but because of the manager as well. So it's going to be a big miss. Yeah. It's going to be a massive miss when Jurgen leaves. It really has. And I'd no idea what's coming next. And the academy will be a little bit uncertain about what's coming next. So if you are under 14s, 15s, 16s, you're thinking, oh, I can't wait to get with Jurgen. Now he's leaving. All of a sudden you're thinking, cool, well, what's coming next?
Just on that as well, that's interesting because obviously Klopp, we've seen sort of the filter down, not just in terms of the tactical side of things and the system, but that style of play has definitely gone down through the ranks. I've seen it firsthand a few times, but also that mentality side of things and obviously the way we go about our business and the way we play has come from the very top, hasn't it? That's important as well because I'm not sure that's necessarily always the case in football clubs. Like some academy teams may play a different style, different way, but Klopp's fingerprints, if you like, are across the entire thing from first team right down to the youth levels, as you say.
Yeah, but as a football club, we do things differently. We don't invest in terms of spend the money that other clubs have had, don't you? Think of City, Arsenal, United, the money they've spent over recent years. Liverpool haven't been that club, so we've had to develop within and give more opportunities than perhaps those football clubs. And it's worked. Yeah. You know, it really has worked. So, how that model, I think that model will continue. But, you know, it's about getting the right man in place when Jurgen does go.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Just to come back to the list of names, and obviously got up to sort of Trent making his debut in 2016. Obviously, we moved then to the action in 2017. Curtis Jones, already mentioned, 2019. Nico Williams, Keith Kellen, Reece Williams all made their breakthrough in 2020. Tyler Morton, 2021. Kay Gordon, Stephen Pagetis, 2022. But then that brings us to the real interesting one. More recently, we've had Conor Bradley, Bobby Clark, Clark, Javel Quanta. They've all established themselves for me as sort of first team options now. Beneath that, we've got Jaden Danz, Lewis Kumas, Ben Doak, James McConnell, Luke Chambers, Callum Scanlon, Trey Anyoni, and there are a few more who've all had a bit of a look in. How? You mentioned Europa League, that's clearly a factor in this as well, but is this sort of the culmination of everything we've spoken about? Jurgen Klopp's 8 years at the football club, the move to the AXA, the incredible work done by the coaches behind the scenes. Is that why all of a sudden it feels like we are getting so many all at once? Because that's never really happened before.
No, but if you go back to Jurgen's first season when he was in the Europa League, I could name Ojo, Ibe, Chirivella, Canos, Ryan Kent, Cameron Brannigan, Stewart, Sinclair. They've all played for our football club and given that opportunity. And the challenge for these young players is that, yeah, they want a career in the game, but to stay at Liverpool. Can they establish themselves at Liverpool? Because I do believe that you need that little bit of luck in terms of opportunity, injuries, being a massive one.
So often is, yeah.
And the fact that the Europa League has enabled them to get game time when they probably wouldn't have had that in the Champions League. So the names I mentioned before, that was a Europa League campaign. And then we haven't seen the same number of young players get that chance when it's been Champions League time. Yes, in Carabao Cup, those sort of games. But that's why, again, maybe that's why there's so many this year, because of the Europa League and the fact we've had so many injuries. So the biggest challenge for these players will be, can you be doing that again next season? Can you be in and around it and getting that same game time? And I don't know, because I don't know what the new manager is going to be coming in, but we've got players out on loan as well that'll be coming back. I think Tyler Morton will be back in it. I think Carvalho will be back in it. Owen Beck could possibly be back in it. The homegrown rule is one that I don't understand fully myself, but what I do know is that Harvey Elliott, Connor Bradley and Jarrell Kwanzaa are not homegrown players. So how does that make sense? So next season, when you need 8 homegrown players, those 3 players, because they were born in 2003, are not homegrown. If they're born in 2002, they're homegrown. So it gets complicated, because if you want a 25-man squad, if you want Salah, Van Dijk, Diaz, Alisson, all these players, you need 8 homegrown players, because if you don't, you can only have 24 if you've got 7. You can only have 23 if you've got 6. Yeah, yeah. So that's how it sort of reduces a little bit. You can have as many as you want under 21, so these lads will get that game time. Am I making sense? Because it's confusing me how that rule is just baffling, but we will continue to see young players get that chance because of that rule. Mm. So for young players, if they're good enough, they'll be in and around the first team. Now, the decision will be, when a new manager comes in, do these players stay at our football club, or do they go out on loan? That'll be a big decision to make. I mentioned Tyler Morton. I think he comes back. I think he's got a real chance this summer to say, right, to the new manager, I want to be part of your plans. Yeah. It's the Euros. A lot of players, senior players, are away with the Euros. If I'm a young kid, I'm going, right, first day of pre-season, I'm on it with the manager, because I know some of the big boys aren't there. So you've got a real chance, maybe an advantage, to say, I want to be part of it this season.
Yeah, and rightfully so. Yeah, it's definitely a clean slate for some of them if they felt like they needed it. I think Fabio Carvalho potentially falls into that category, to be fair. Yeah, wonderful, Neil. Thank you so much for coming in. Thank you to everybody for listening. Thanks, everybody, for contributing as ever. Take care. I'll see you all again very, very soon.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.